a podcast of the cinema.
I'm Salt and Fat.
I'm Acid and Heat.
Coming this fall to Netflix. Your name is Alonzo Duralde. You're the co-host of Who Shot Ya on the Maximum Fun Network. You're the co-host of What the Flick on the Young Turks Network. You are also, in your daytime life, the reviews editor, movie reviews editor at therap.com.
And you are Dave White, film critic for The Wrap, and keeper of the flame of linoleum knife in all things.
Well, yeah. I'm the man who sends you your prizes if you join us on Patreon. Somebody just told me this week that their linoleum knife Christmas tree ornament arrived in tiny pieces. Yeah, I'm very upset about this.
Dang it.
So I've got, I mean, listen, the weird part is
they've made them to Europe.
They've made them to Europe in one piece, but not to a United States location. Now, other people are getting them and
intact.
So something happened.
All right.
But I'll be shipping out another one to this sad, unhappy subscriber.
I would be crushed. And apparently so was the ornament.
The ornament was crushed, yeah. We'll talk about all that Patreon stuff at the end. When it's time to sell you things.
Maybe we shouldn't always talk about it at the end, because then people just turn it off. Maybe we should spring it on them in the middle when they don't know.
Well, maybe, but also we...
Like
you
a
know,
thief in the night.
We always talk about things after we talk about that thing. So I think that, you know...
Okay.
People who are... really devoted to hearing every golden word out of our mouths.
Right, but that's not who we're trying to sell.
Listen, if you like this show, go to patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Yeah.
Look at all your options. See which subscription level is right for you. What do you want? You want digital audio content? Really good digital audio content from us?
We got it.
Do you want prizes that you'll get in the mail that won't even be broken into a million pieces?
We got that, too.
Yeah, so go there and, you know, spend your money.
If you are a member who gets the Linoleum Knife club meeting level, you would have spent your Saturday night watching the Barbra Streisand re-edit of A Star Is Born on Netflix.
You sure would have.
And talking about it with us and other members.
Thank
with
you.
Dave, actually.
Thank you for those of you who joined me last night. You were at special invitation-only screening of Die Hard
I was. But also, if you are an LKTV subscriber, which is pretty much everybody who subscribed, because that's the baseline, coming up this week, it's the annual Cancel Too Soon LKTV Christmas in July crossover.
Are you going to follow through with the thing I just handed off to you?
Oh, well, we can talk about Die Hard?
About the thing you went to last night.
It's not that interesting.
Okay. It is.
All right. Talk about it. I went. They were celebrating the 30th anniversary of Die Hard on the Fox lot, specifically at Fox Plaza, a.k.a. Nakatomi Plaza.
Correct.
So they screened the film on the roof of the parking structure. So there was like one of those big inflatable outdoor screens with the building itself looming behind. So every time like they would cut to the building in the movie, and they show that building, the exterior, a lot in the movie. I really appreciated this time. The actual building itself was looming above it, so that was pretty cool. I didn't go. They did a screening of Jackie Brown in the parking lot of the mall where like Robert De Niro like smacks around Bridget Fonda or whatever.
There's
I forget where that is, but anyway, I've never been to one of those screenings where they do it in the place where they shot the film.
And so, now you have, and you were asked to come and introduce the film.
Yes, I introduced... Yes.
That's my favorite part of this story that you keep not talking about.
Sorry. Yes, I introduced Bonnie Bedelia and Reginald Vell Johnson, who were both in the film, who were both there last night. They were lovely. But it was, I feel weird talking
about this. All right, fine, you're done talking about this, because you're not giving me what I want.
What do you want?
I don't know. luxuriate in your specialness or just a little bit.
You know what? I'm feeling unspecial because all I just saw photos from the event that they managed to crop me out of all of them.
Listen, what they think of you is not relevant. They cut those photos so they could be sent out to the press.
Yes.
And out in the real world, outside of a diehard screening that you are asked to come in and introduce, sure, no one cares about you.
No, it was
but
very...
the fact that you were asked and that you went and did it and it was there and there's no media evidence of it at all is still a good thing.
No, it was very cool that they asked me to do it, and I got to assert my expertise in saying why I'm allowed to insist that Die Hard is in fact a Christmas
Indeed.
Movie.
Yeah, because you wrote the damn book. That's why.
Right.
Right.
So you want to come at me about Christmas movies? Write your own book, and then we'll talk.
Right.
Until then.
Yeah, Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
All right. So two points of news before we start discussing the current cinema.
Mm-hmm.
We were asked on Twitter. It was Twitter, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Why we did not discuss the death of John Schnepp. Instead, we talked about the death of Jonathan Gold in the last episode. I did not know John Schnepp.
Nor did I.
When he died, I actually had to say, I'm sorry, everyone we know knows has died, and we didn't know this person. And so I had to go look him up, and I had only ever seen the Metalocalypse stuff that he had done, and you had seen...
I saw The Death of Superman Lives, the right. documentary he did about the Tim Burton Superman that ever got made. But yeah, I mean, I guess he was involved with Schmodown, but...
He was part of the Schmoes world, but again, we did not...
on the outskirts of that, that I had never met him, and...
It's quite sad.
Yes.
He was young, he had a stroke, it's terrible. But we had, honestly, we were sort of... The death of Jonathan Gold, who we did know...
Yes.
Sort of definitely superseded that with us, you know, personally.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It is sad.
Sorry that we did not address it earlier. He was someone we did not know, and someone we did know died at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing on Twitter.
The other thing on Twitter has happened today.
Yes.
And you're in the middle of it somehow, and I don't know how you are, I'm not involved.
All I did was retweet somebody else.
Go. Don't do that.
And then it just became this thing where, like, this ongoing discussion, I'm still stuck in the loop of it, even though I have long since ceased to care. So, okay, the website or streaming service Mubi, M-U-B-I,
right,
which specializes in foreign and art house cinema.
Yes.
Has an ad that I guess is in a subway station and maybe in the pages of Film Comment.
All right.
And it says something like, if you think Tarkovsky composed Swan Lake, then Mubi isn't for you.
Didn't he? Also The Nutcracker? Also The Rite of Spring?
Now you're getting way off.
What's happening? What is this Tarkovsky they're talking about?
Well...
Me don't know.
So here's the thing. Whether or not you already know who Tarkovsky is, the idea that, like, a site that specializes in a somewhat more esoteric brand of cinema would advertise it by saying, well, if you don't pass this cultural knowledge test, then we're not for you.
Right.
That just seems super obnoxious.
It is super obnoxious.
I was retweeting Andrew Jupin from the I Hate Movies podcast, who basically said that this was like the art house version of toxic fandom.
Absolutely.
And I totally agree.
Right.
You know, like, for myself, I used to be the person that if somebody admitted they hadn't seen some great, you know, important piece of cinema, I would do the, what? I don't do that anymore. I now say...
You've grown and you've learned.
I now say, I envy you getting to see that for the first time.
You're right.
Because that's the approach.
Listen, I'm 54 years old. Do you know how many great films in cinema history I still haven't seen?
Oh, yeah. Ditto. Plenty.
A lot of them. FYI, Stravinsky composed The Rite of Spring.
I know you do.
Just so you know, I'm actually an elitist snob. And I'll tell you something.
I'll let you know when Stravinsky has a hit.
I might say to you, that if you're just casually asking about movie, and I brought up the name Tarkovsky, and you said, who's that? I'd say, Russian director, you know, explain.
Yeah.
And then that person would go, oh. And I'd say, okay, well, then movie is not what you want.
Yeah, because they only, I think they offer like 30 films at a time. It's very curated.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, then that's not what you want. I mean, but there's a way to say, this isn't actually something you want.
Sure.
And it's not a way to advertise your service at all. At all.
I mean, like, Filmstruck...
It's a dumb way to do things.
Filmstruck would never do that.
No.
Filmstruck operates under the assumption, like, you love this stuff. And you know what? Maybe there's stuff here that is stuff you don't know exists, but you're adventurous enough and curious enough that you'll be delighted to discover it, and we're thrilled to be bringing it to you.
Right.
Which is... And that's the play. That's how you sell this stuff, not... You don't. You're not cool enough. It's not your job to stand in front of art with a clipboard and say you're not on the list.
You're Electra Abundance at Indochine.
Indochine, exactly.
We do not cater to the bridge and tunnel crowd.
So anyway,
this room is not my color. I prefer winter lilac.
If y'all did not watch
See
Pose,
what you can do about my quarters. Sleeping quarters.
If y'all didn't watch Pose, go watch Pose.
Y'all gotta watch Pose.
So good.
I just popped my pee.
I did too.
Real poppity, Pose. Just like that, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm totally team Andrew Jupin on this one, but all these other dudes like, oh, well, no, I don't see why it's... And it just... I had to start muting people, because there was just so much, like... white fanboy fragility on display here. I was like, I can't with you people.
What's wrong with liking Tarkovsky? I guess I'm the only one. It's just me and my one copy of Stalker that no one else owns. I'll go off here by myself and be a cinephile.
Somebody on Twitter actually said, this is the whitest conversation happening on Twitter, and Mike Pence is on CNN right now, so that's saying something.
Listen, we watched La Collection News this afternoon on Filmstruck, so...
Does that make us better than you? No.
Yes. Oh, wait.
I mean,
no.
Yes.
I mean, no.
I mean, no. No.
Okay, yeah, it does.
Does not. We also watched Netflix's A Christmas Prince for the Cancel Too Soon crossover.
I want y'all to know something. This coming Friday, we leave town for about how many days? Like 12 days.
Yeah.
11 or 12 days. I can't even count that high. But one of the LKTV episode that we are going to leave you with is this.
Our half of the Christmas crossover.
Yeah. What's the name of this movie?
A Christmas Prince.
It is the barf of puke. And this second year now tradition of doing this is going to be the actual death of me. I despise doing this with every fiber of my being.
Well, last year...
So subscribe, won't you? So that you can hear me suffer. Also, use a lot of profanity.
It's true. Dave insists.
This special episode of LKTV is going to have all the swears.
Dave waives the no swearing rule when we have to talk about
made
for television Christmas movies.
No.
He can't do it otherwise.
I can't exist on the microphone talking about these movies unless I can fully express myself with all the colors in my paint box.
When you paint with all the colors of the wind.
I paint with all the curses that I can imagine.
Moving on. What are we talking about? What are we seeing?
We got movies. Mm-hmm. Here they are. You saw, but I did not see. Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
And you would, I think, really enjoy this.
But I am concerned that I wouldn't know what was going on.
Here's the thing. It is
because I don't actually give one flying heck about your comic book nerd lifestyle.
Right, I understand that.
All right.
And I'll say this. there are jokes that you would that would go by you because you were not a comics nerd.
All right.
But there are enough. There are so many jokes in this movie.
Right.
And plenty that you would get.
So kind of like all the NBA jokes in Uncle Drew.
For instance.
That just went whoosh, exactly. Like a basketball past my head. Okay.
Whizzing right past. Yeah, so this is a big...
Super liked Uncle Drew, though.
Big screen... Well, I super like this. It's a big screen adaptation of the Cartoon Network show. It is a very silly kind of cartoon, you know, superhero cartoon, because this version of the Teen Titans is not the sort of brooding one or the dark one they're going to unleash on the DC Universe streaming thing. This is a very, like, we like to eat burritos and dance two songs, you
okay,
know.
All right.
And because of that goofiness, they aren't being taken seriously in the superhero world to the extent that no one's making a movie about them, even though they're making a movie about everybody else.
Right.
Including, and this is, you know, if you're a DC Comics reader, you'll get why it's funny that they're making a movie for the Challengers of the Unknown or Detective Chimp. Like, these are really super all but forgotten characters.
All right.
And so it's about their determination to be worthy of having a movie made and stopping the plot of Slade, who is voiced by Will Arnett. And
again with the Will Arnett as
again with the Will Arnett as
the cartoon villain. All right. Yes.
Clearly they love him over at Warner Animation.
Yeah.
It's very funny, and I think even just the stuff that you know and are sick of from having to see these superhero movies,
yes,
you would find really funny here. Like, there is a whole bit where there's a bit where they decide the only way they're going to become important superheroes is if they can stop the other superheroes from ever existing.
Yeah.
So, like, they figure out how to make Krypton not explode. They send Bruce Wayne and his parents somewhere, another way home that isn't Crime Alley. In a way that is so hilarious that I hope that no DC movie can ever do the origin of Batman again. Like, it's, they really have a good time making fun of it. There are fun songs. It's candy-colored and silly. It doesn't outstay its welcome. It just is such a joke that it never, right, it never lags or you know, even when it sort of has its little, here's the lesson we all learned about friendship or whatever, like, it's couched in enough goofy stuff that it never feels like a drag. I really had a good time at this movie.
My other thing is that I don't know anything about the Teen Titans.
You don't have to.
Alright. Okay.
It's Robin, it's Cyborg, who was that black robot in Justice League.
Alright.
And then three other characters that are completely self-explanatory that you'll figure out in 2 seconds that you don't have to know anything about them. I honestly, look, I was going to say you'll watch it on a plane, you're always unconscious.
I'm not
on
saying
a plane.
I don't want to see it. I'm just saying I can't imagine, in spite of your clear, you know, love of what you saw, I can't imagine myself taking the time away from other stuff that is already on my list.
I understand.
You know?
Christy, like, loved it.
I have a list. And I would need you to just have it on in front of me.
Yes.
While I was already doing something
else. When it comes on cable, I'll be like, oh, here's that thing that you never got around to. I think you would find this funny.
Because it took you long enough to push me towards seeing, what's the Vera Farmiga movie?
Higher Ground. That took me, what, 7 years or something?
It took you many years to convince me to sit down and watch Higher Ground, which is very good.
Yes.
But I, you know, And I had actually a personal connection to it.
Yes.
Because it's about, you know, coming out of fundamentalism.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
You had so many other important things to do.
I had a lot of
for
other...
For 7 years.
I did. Listen, you know I do a lot of things around here. You're the one that comes up to me at least once a month and says, thank you for all the things you do. Even if it's something I didn't notice.
Nonetheless, I'm sure there was a 90-minute period somewhere in that 7 years that you could have...
Oh, yeah, there was. And I was probably having a little nap during that time.
I just remembered today that you still haven't seen Space Station 76, so we got to work on that.
That's correct. Okay, what if I didn't watch so much Pornhub?
That's on you. That's your personal quiet time. I think that's your equivalent of that app that makes you be calm for 30 seconds. where you just look at like you know what you look at a rainforest for 30 seconds.
The Calm app, I've just started doing on my own.
Have you?
Without the app.
I see.
I'll stop and think to myself, what am I going to do for the next minute? I'm going to set a minute timer on my phone.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to do nothing. And I'm going to think about nothing. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take deep breaths. And I'm going to relax my face. Have you guys ever relaxed your face?
You guys.
There's this thing that you can do. Relax your face. And you don't even know that your face isn't relaxed until you consciously relax your face. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, but I don't feel like my face is unrelaxed all the time.
Oh, mine is never relaxed. My face is always contorted into some sort of...
You're a regular Carmen Miranda.
Yeah, my face is always in some sort of grimace, like an Edvard Munch painting. Like, there is no relaxation on my face.
How is it that you are not a teeth grinder? It seems like you have all of the warning signs.
I probably am.
No, I'd hear it.
Would you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But do you know what I do as I'm drifting off to sleep?
Make lists.
I relax my face.
Oh, okay.
One of the things I do to help myself go to sleep at night, and it's a very effective thing, is I intentionally let my face just go droop.
Blah.
Yeah. Drooling everywhere. But at some point during each day, what you should do is stop and, like, for even just for a minute, sit down, close your eyes, think of nothing, relax your body, and relax your face. Because your face will be so happy that you relaxed it. You just, like, let it all just go slack. And it feels good. That's your health tip for the day.
From the king of tension.
From the king of health.
Okay.
I saw something you didn't see.
Oh?
I said, don't worry, he won't get far on foot.
Ah, so you did.
I was almost going to skip this.
I had kind of decided I was gonna, and now you're making me rethink it.
I was gonna skip this because Gus Van Sant has not been my cinema friend lately.
Mm. Yeah, and you didn't even see Sea of Trees.
He's been driving me kind of crazy with not good movies.
If you had seen Sea of Trees, you would be like leaving the flaming bag of poop on his doorstep.
Time was in the late 80s and all through the 90s.
Oh, yeah, he was the man.
You wanted to go see whatever the new Gus Van Sant movie was.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was even Cowgirls Get the Blues.
Yeah.
You were like, okay, I hear this is a crazy nightmare. I gotta go. Yeah. Just to experience what people are talking about.
Yeah. It does have a great Katie Lang soundtrack, though.
Correct. If you're into that sort of thing.
And you should be.
But recently I have not, you know, been very interested in Mr. Van Sant's output. It's been...
spotty.
Yeah. I'm being generous with that word.
Mm.
But then, one of my friends said to me, you know, Kim Gordon's in this. I said, oh, really? Well, that's interesting. I've seen every film that Kim Gordon has been in, and I feel sort of like a completist about it.
Okay.
Because she's not an actress, like, at all.
Your interest in DC Comics is about correlative to my interest in Sonic Youth.
Is it correlative or correlative? I don't know how to say that word.
Yeah, I was going to say, where's it? I'm pretty sure it's correlative. If those are the choices.
Is it the thing that I just mangled out of my mouth, or is it the way you said it? I am fascinated by Kim Gordon in movies because she's got one way of expressing herself, and it's like this.
It's like she's smoking even when she isn't smoking.
Uh-huh. Well, you, you look up the word deadpan in the dictionary.
She's right next to Buster Keaton.
Yeah. And I'm in the camp of Kim Gordon can do nothing wrong. Love that woman.
Okay.
For 35 years, loved that woman. Right. Never met her, but a goddess to be worshipped, is what I'm really trying to say.
Okay.
Okay. But no, she's not an actress. So when I heard that she was in it, I thought, okay, interested. And then I heard Beth Ditto is in this movie. Boy, do I love Beth Ditto. Singer of the band The Gossip. I don't think she's ever been in a film until now, and if she has, I don't know what it was. So I thought, all right. Oh, and then I heard Udo Kier is in it, and I thought, all right, I gotta go.
Well, he's in a lot of Van Zandt movies, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's not in many other movies. Then I heard Rooney Mara is in it, and I like her because she's sort of an alien. I thought, all right, the cast. I'll go for the cast.
What does Rooney Mara eat in this movie?
Invisible pie.
Ah. That's my question when I hear she's in something.
What
does she eat in this movie? A whole pie? Not a whole pie?
This is the story of John Callahan. Here's the stupid thing. I didn't know a thing about what this movie was even about. I knew Joaquin Phoenix was in it and that he was in a wheelchair and that there was discussion about how there were people who were wishing that an actual disabled actor had played Callahan.
Is there discussion about that? Because I heard that about Skyscraper, but yes. I haven't even heard people get angry about this movie. That's how little of a ripple.
But I did read about this.
Okay, so okay. Someone is. All right.
Someone is.
Like I mentioned it in my Skyscraper.
And just like we talked about last week with Skyscraper, we agree. And now we have to find those actors.
Yes. And give them work.
Yeah. So it's about John Callahan, who was a cartoonist and also an alcoholic. And I did not realize that this film was about how he became a cartoonist and how he became a person in recovery from alcoholism and the process of both.
Was he a cartoonist before the accident?
No, he was just a
just a drunk.
Just a party. He was just a party dude.
Ah.
And so he's involved in a car accident. He winds up a quadriplegic. And continues to be an alcoholic. And then goes into recovery. So the first half of the film is like sort of packed with incident, you know, flashbacks to his earlier life and the process of, you know, going through, you know, the hospital stays and the rehab stays and, you know, to figure out how to relearn how to use his body, all that stuff. Second half of the film begins to meander in ways that make me far more interested in it than I was during the first half of the film, because the first half of the film is very much in the school of Gus Van Sant's heartwarming bracket of
Finding Forrester
movies. Yeah. The second half starts to feel more Van Sant-y to me because it doesn't seem to know where it's going or what its purpose is going to be.
Was Joaquin Phoenix and Jerry? No, that was Matt Damon and the Affleck.
Casey Affleck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I found myself, as it went on, more and more interested and really, really engaged by the performances. And I'm not just talking about Joaquin Phoenix. I'm talking about Kim Gordon, who has a recurring small role as a woman in his recovery group who puts his feet to the fire. Hmm. She's still deadpan as she can be, but it fits her here.
Hmm.
Like, finally, there's a movie where the way Kim Gordon is works with that character. Although I will say that she was effectively weird and deadpan in Olivier Assayas's Boarding Gate, although she had very little to do.
I think the only thing I've ever seen her in is Last Days, a movie I loathe.
Yeah, I know.
But I didn't loathe her in it.
Right. Beth Ditto is terrific. And she is employing her Arkansas accent really effectively. I think she's lived away from there for so long that she can shut it down when she wants to. But, well, she opens her mouth in this movie and you're like, oh, honey, you are from Arkansas. Carrie Brownstein's in it. Heather Matarazzo has one scene, which is quite funny. And here is Joaquin Phoenix is terrific as this guy who is an a-hole. Like, kind of, even though he's in recovery from being an alcoholic, he's still an a-hole. Jonah Hill is the most surprising person in the film. Jonah Hill plays sort of the rich hippie leader of the recovery group. And he is so calming and so gentle and so kind. His performance is so much goodness. Now, I've seen Jonah Hill deliver some great performances outside of the world of the comedy stuff that he's done.
Yeah. Moneyball.
And, I think he's a really interesting actor when he doesn't have to be funny. But I've never seen him be someone that felt lovable. And here you have, he delivers compassion and he invites it as well. And by the end of the film, I found myself moved by the subject matter of people in recovery trying to become better than what they are. A Michael Keaton movie from the late 80s called Clean and Sober that sort of tracks the same way. It's also pretty good.
I've always heard that. I've never seen it. It's Glenn Gordon Caron, right? The guy who created Moonlighting, I want
to
say.
Yeah, you're going to, I'm going to have to IMDb that information for you. But not enough movies go into the details of what it means to address your addiction, and also to address who you have become because of that addiction, and how you will not only stay away from the substance that you're addicted to, but how you will rearrange your life and try to become a person worth knowing. I really like this film.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't know when I'll get to it in my
busy schedule. Right, exactly. No, I know. It's going to be... It'll be a make me. You make me watch Teen Titans, I'll make you watch it. I also saw Skyscraper this week.
Yes.
Finally.
Did I talk about it?
You did.
Okay.
Then, you did. Then, so we don't have to go into it in too much detail.
Right.
Other than, you're a crazy person if you liked this better than Mission Impossible.
I did not like it better than Mission Impossible. I want to be very clear about the difference here.
I saw you on What the Flick.
And I made this very clear on What the Flick. I said, in every empirical way, Mission Impossible is a better movie.
Yes.
I'm saying I had more fun watching Skyscraper than I did watching Mission Impossible. Because, as with the previous Mission Impossible, it gets exhausting. McQuarrie doesn't know when to, like, let the audience breathe a little, because Tom Cruise has these stunts that he wants to do, and he's going to cram them all in there, no matter what that does to the pacing. That's all.
I think you're bonkers.
Well,
let's talk about Mission Impossible.
You're Mrs. Bonkers.
Let's talk about Mission Impossible.
Fine. So this one, I think more than... In the same way that, was it Quantum of Solace? Like, it sort of immediately picked up after Casino Royale, which was sort of unusual for the Bond movies. This is the first Mission Impossible movie that feels directly connected to the previous one. Like, they're still sort of sweeping up unfinished business from Rogue Nation. Same director and a lot of the same characters are back in, not just Hunt and his team, but also, you know, bad guy and whatnot. And it's, you know, blah, blah, get the plutonium. But, you know, what that entails is they have it, they lose it because Hunt makes the choice to, like, save his team as opposed to saving the plutonium. They never really stop to explain why maybe that's not the greatest idea in the world.
You are meant to understand him as having a moral center.
Yes.
In spite of the fact that he works hand-in-hand with the CIA. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Well, and still, your moral center involves, like, well, millions of people might die, but I saved Ving Rhames,
right.
You know. Which I don't think is how these things work. Anyway, so the CIA gets involved, and CIA honcho Angela Bassett, who is not in the movie nearly enough, insists that her guy, Henry Cavill, tag along. And so it's spy stuff and fighting and very cool fighting and very cool stunts and lots of them.
Yes. Now, I'll give it to this. You're talking about the plot, blah, 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 get the plutonium. If you want to ignore all those details, you can, and just enjoy the stunts. However, blah, 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 get the plutonium is actually laid out pretty understandably.
Yes, definitely.
I am the first person to check out when the spy movie starts making no sense because people are using jargon and words and things that, you know, I don't know what's going on anymore.
No. Whoever wrote all the go to the place and get the thing is doing so capably.
It was one of the reasons why the first few Mission Impossible movies left me cold.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like they were robotic and empty. And I know people will come at me about this, but they didn't feel like anything to me. I was annoyed by them, sort of actively. And I remember at the time, I was on a syndicated weekly radio show that was on a really like a hot hits station.
Mm-hmm.
And every week I would go on and be the film critic. And I got in so much hot water with everyone on that show and the listeners for saying that I thought Tom Cruise was a big box of nothing.
How dare you?
And I said, go on, fight me. Yeah. I don't think he's a big box of nothing anymore. I think he's a big box of weirdness now. And so that makes him interesting to me suddenly. Mm-hmm. Not suddenly, but over the years,
sure.
I've come to understand what I really believe about Tom Cruise. We'll get to that in a second, too. But the plot makes sense.
Yes.
The action is thrilling because you can't tell where Tom Cruise really doing all of these stunts begins and where the stunt people come in, stunt people who have Tom Cruise's face digitally grafted onto them.
He apparently learned how to fly that helicopter.
Oh, he flew that helicopter. Not exactly the way you see that helicopter being flown. He did that skydiving.
Mm.
He did all that rope stuff. He did all that jumping on the helicopter and climbing up the rope. And he did all of that. Horrifying.
Yeah.
Now, you need a double for insurance purposes.
Sure.
That's the rule of working on sets. I know this because we have friends who work on sets.
Yeah.
But these action sequences are so good that you don't know where Tom Cruise begins and where the stunt person ends or vice versa.
Right.
You don't know where what he's doing is real versus what he's doing is against a green screen. He says that there were no green screens. That's a lie. There are just really good green screens.
Sure, yes.
As opposed to, all green screens in Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, which are the equivalent of the green screens in The Room.
Yes. I was actually thinking about
and
that.
And all the more charming for it. I saw this film this morning at 9 a.m. at the Arclight with a cup of green tea and a banana piece of banana bread, and I could not have been happier.
I wish you'd seen it in IMAX. I mean,
I saw it on a giant screen at the Arclight.
I saw it in it doesn't matter if I saw AMC it in IMAX. Yeah. But I would be interested in seeing this again in like actual honest to God IMAX.
There is no honest to God IMAX theater in Los Angeles.
Oh, go on.
I'm going to finish my sentence now.
Go on. down.
There is no honest to God IMAX theater in Los Angeles with seats that are comfortable.
Wrong.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Tell me what.
AMC,
tell me where.
The AMC Universal City.
Incorrect.
Okay, AMC Burbank. The 16. That big house with the IMAX has the nice AMC seats. You're right. Universal City, those are uncomfortable. AMC Burbank, that has comfy seats.
This movie is 2.5 hours long.
It certainly is.
So, and it is meant to be absolutely entertaining and not else. But, and so it's not like you can even sit through a 2.5 hour movie in an uncomfortable seat and go, yeah, but this is really important. This isn't important at all.
Right.
This is just like sensation. top of the line action entertainment.
Yeah. But even
thrilling from start to finish. And so many other things going on in it as well.
Oh, we're talking about the erotic tension between Tom Cruise and Henry Cavill? Because it's there.
Every time that those two are being grouchy and cantankerous with each other or fighting over something, all you can think of is, and I don't care what your sexual orientation is, the first thought in your head is going to be, kiss, 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 kiss. Also, there is a fight scene that takes place in a men's room.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And this fight scene begins in the most homosexual, clandestine DL cruising way that I've ever seen in a mainstream film. And then comes the fight. Now, everyone here has seen It's a Wonderful Life. Am I right? Yes.
I can't wait to see where this is going.
There's a moment in It's a Wonderful Life at the end when Donna Reed, who has been out looking for Jimmy Stewart frantically all Christmas Eve, finally arrives back home. The door blows open. She sweeps into the house, and off comes this scarf that's around her head in one fluid motion. It is graceful and as though the wind just blew it off her head, and her hair is perfect underneath it. How this was filmed, I don't know, but it is one of the most breathtaking moments in It's a Wonderful Life. Henry Cavill is Donna Reed in this bathroom. Henry Cavill manages somehow in one, like, whoosh, to whip off his suit jacket and square himself up for a fight.
Yeah, that moment of him, like, cocking his fists is like...
Ooh, ooh, oh.
You ovulated.
You want it on a loop. You're just like, well, hello, where did you come from? Like, it's the same moment. It's this glorious, like, entrance. He's already in the room, and he's making another entrance. Leading the way is this mustache that is such a topic of conversation because apparently it ruined Justice League. Guess what?
Justice League ruined itself.
Can a mustache be a performance? The answer now is yes. Burt Reynolds already knew this, but now Henry Cavill knows it. He has to have a mustache in every film from now on because
it gave him a soul.
It is the mustache of 2018. It might be one of the great cinema mustaches of all time.
Yes.
Because here's the thing I don't quite know about Henry Cavill. Is he a good actor? Or is he a movie star?
Like, well...
You can be both.
Yeah. Because
and we know at this point now, oh, he's a movie star.
Yes.
But is he a good actor?
Seeing Henry Cavill in good suits made me kind of wish that there was going to be another Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Right.
But what he and Armie Hammer are giving us in that movie are movie stars.
Right.
They can... Armie Hammer can act... Yes. But in Man from U.N.C.L.E., he's a movie star.
Right.
And Henry Cavill, up till now, has been a movie star. Maybe he can act, too. I don't know.
Maybe he can act. Listen. I want him to become a good actor, if he's not yet. I don't want him talking about anything other than acting.
Oh, God, no.
If you want to keep liking Henry Cavill, just don't go Google him about anything
yeah.
of his opinions about anything in the world, because
you don't want to know.
He's proving himself to be kind of a dumbass.
Yeah.
And let's hope he changes. He hasn't done anything horribly wrong yet, except have really stupid ideas that I think are informed by his good looks. I think he has gone through life on a pass.
Could be.
Because of those classy
his
looks.
Damn classy
those
looks.
Damn classy looks. And he doesn't understand how life works for other people.
Hmm.
And he doesn't understand what his looks have afforded him out in the real world. This is just a guess. I don't know him personally. All I know is the stuff I hear him saying out in the world in interviews, which I need to stop paying attention to.
Yes.
Better because I need to only focus on his fighting and this mustache. And I'm not even speaking of this in a I'm gay and I like a guy with a mustache kind of way, even though I totally do. If I were a heterosexual man, I would still understand
the power of that mustache.
The power of this mustache.
Yes.
And his physical self in this film. Tom Cruise, on the other hand. Well, I shouldn't say on the other hand, because he's really good at doing this stuff.
Mm.
And I think it's because of Scientology.
Okay.
I think, because a lot of people have been talking lately about Tom Cruise's seemingly lack of aging.
Mm. Well, somebody pointed out on Twitter that Tom Cruise in this movie is 5 years older
right.
than Wilford Brimley in Cocoon.
Right. That's the internet meme that's been going around all past 2 weeks. But the fact is that, you know, he is getting older, and you can see it in his face, and it makes him more handsome and less blandly pretty boyish, which is a plus. So, you know, lucky him, he's getting better looking as he gets older. But he's still not aging in a way that people regularly age. And he hasn't allowed... What is he, 57, 58 now?
58, yeah.
He hasn't allowed that aging process to alter what he thinks he needs to do. And I think what he thinks he needs to do is get better and better and more successful and succeed and achieve and achieve and achieve and succeed and get better. That's his entire religion in a nutshell. Scientology is meant to be this grand self-improvement project.
Right.
You go up a level, you go up a level, you go up a level.
As long
as you're willing to pay all that money.
Right.
You go up the levels.
You gain abilities
right.
to your mind thing.
I think he thinks that his life is meant to be one achievement on top of another. And therefore, when he approaches a movie now, he's like, what can I do that I've never done before? What can I master? I'm going to fly a helicopter. I'm going to skydive with the, you know, cameras on me, and I'm going to fight someone in the midair while I skydive. I think he thinks that his life is just going to keep getting more achievey.
But I'll tell you, his version of achievey for a while there was like, I'm going to work with Scorsese.
I'm
going to work with Oliver Stone. I'm
yep.
going to work with Stanley Kubrick. Yep. It's like, does he, at Spielberg, does he feel like he checked everybody off his list?
No. I think here's what's going to, I have more of my theory in,
okay.
to come. I think as he starts to get actually old, because, you know, you're in your 50s, I'm 54, I'm old now, compared to probably everyone listening to this show. But I'm not actually old yet. I'm just old compared to.
Yes.
Like, I'm not 65, 75. 85,
right.
95. Like, the more you go, the more actually old you become.
Tom Cruise
if
is still,
you're lucky.
Tom Cruise is still at that age where I'm sure with, like, hyper-vigilance of his diet and exercise
yes.
regime.
And I believe that, too, is part of Scientology for him. I think that as he gets to be 65, 75, 85, like, he's going to say, hey, this is the name I always throw out, hey, Claire Denis, what about me? Seriously. He'll
become Catherine Deneuve.
He wants it all.
Yeah.
He wants it all. He yeah. wants to be the big movie star in the big blockbuster movie, and I think he's never been unhappier than when box office slump was happening.
Yes.
I don't think he cared about people making fun of him for being a Scientologist and jumping on the couch and all that stuff. I don't think he cared about that. No. I think that's his thick-skinnedness about Scientology.
Right.
I think that he cares more about being seen as unsuccessful and unachievy, and therefore, that's the goal. So he has to go be in the Mission Impossible movies and make them as real as possible because he's really doing all the stuff
right.
and running, sprinting in a way that looks as though he also isn't breathing. Did you watch that?
Yes.
Did you see that?
The Tom Cruise run is a thing unto itself.
And I also think that he wants to, I bet in his head, he equates that with going to London for 13 months and being abused by Stanley Kubrick.
But, and of course, and here's the thing.
I think they're the same thing in his head.
But also, because I think every actor, every big actor has this, and I'm sure
right.
he has it a big time.
Right.
He's not going to rest until he gets that Oscar.
Oh, yes.
And he's not going to get that Oscar from
Doing
the
Mission Impossible movies. Right.
He's going to get that Oscar from Claire Denis.
from what Nobody's Fool, whatever the version, whatever Paul Newman did.
Actually, The Color of Money with him.
The Color of Money. Whatever Paul Newman did, that's his blueprint.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, if anything, he'll probably go back to Scorsese
right.
to do a sequel to The Color of Money where now he's
right.
the age of Fast Eddie. And
it will be something.
And he has to...
Because he has things to check off his list.
He's going
to
teach, Brooklyn Beckham how to play pool or whatever,
Brooklyn Beckham. Is Brooklyn Beckham an actor now?
I don't know.
I know he's like a teen model, right?
He's something. Yeah, I'm trying to think of...
Do you follow them on Instagram?
I do not.
Okay, I follow Vicky Becks on Instagram.
Of course you do.
They are so damn rich, and they all love each other so much. That family is constantly having a good time together.
Well, that's nice.
You would think she would just be posting about, here's my new collection that costs $7,000 for
shoes,
a blouse.
Shoes, darling.
Yeah. Like, no. She just posts about, their life at home. Like, I watch her Instagram stories, and they're just always having a good time. That's a family of beautiful people who are rich who all love each other.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, it's great. Anyway, so these are my ideas about Tom Cruise. None of them are based in anything I know about actual Tom Cruise, because I've never met him.
This is your fan fiction.
This is all the things that I just think in my head. And I think that they help him be a better actor, if maybe not such a good human being, because he has, of course, driven his own children away from their adoptive mother, and he has also tried to ruin Katie Holmes' life, and apparently never sees his own daughter. So, I don't know what else is going on out there. I just know that when it comes to his job, he's employee of the month. Every damn month.
That's well said.
Yes.
You have not seen Blindspotting yet, so we're going to hold off until you have.
I know. I said I would see it this past week, and I didn't. I went to see Skyscraper instead because I couldn't believe that I was having to compare and contrast it to Mission Impossible 2. By the way, you're still wrong for enjoying Skyscraper more.
Look,
it was stupid.
It is stupid.
I'm not all that especially interesting to me. I love The Towering Inferno.
No.
I was hoping that Justin Chang was right, that it was a towering Dwayne Inferno. I think Justin Chang was wrong, too.
Look, I can't...
I'm glad it's not making any money. How's about that?
Man. Look, I experienced what I experienced, and my opinions are my opinions. I in no way am going to say that Skyscraper is in any way a superior film to Mission Impossible Fallout. I grant you all those things. I'm just saying my personal experience in sitting through those two movies,
yes.
I left one elated and one thrilled but exhausted. Sue me.
One more bit about Mission Impossible.
What's that?
Ving Rhames is a beautiful man.
Mm.
Michelle Monaghan, thank God she gets all this work, but I still want more for her.
Yes.
I want more for her.
Go back.
I won't rest until she gets what she deserves.
If y'all didn't see Kiss Kiss Bang Bang,
yeah.
She's so great and so funny mm-hmm. and so alive. And yeah, movies have not been kind to her and figured out what to do with her, and it's distressing.
It is distressing. It causes us distress.
And if the Mission Impossible people want to do a spin-off, like the way the Fast and the Furious are doing a side movie with just a couple of the characters, they want to do a side movie with Rebecca Ferguson, I'm in line.
Right.
I mean,
Rebecca Ferguson is so cool.
Yeah. She's amazing. Also, if they want to do there's a cut of Fallout that is just Angela Bassett at her desk responding to the events of Fallout, I would sit through that as well.
If there's anyone who could get me to think the CIA is not a terrorist organization, it would be Angela Bassett.
Hearing Angela Bassett say plutonium is like hearing Alan Rickman in Die Hard say detonators.
Yes. Yeah.
I could listen to it all night.
CIA is evil. We all know this, right?
Okay. Unquestionably.
The movies would love us to think that they aren't.
Mm-hmm. And that's how they get the support of the U.S. government.
All right.
What's your DVD pick?
So back in the 1970s, when I was just a young boy in the weird, wacky world of the conservative evangelical church, we all loved I'm putting the word documentary in air quotes here, The Late Great Planet Earth. Where Orson Welles narrated it, and it was all about Bible prophecy.
The end times.
The end times. And it scared me to death, because I thought, Orson Welles is saying it, and it's in the Bible. It's true. Well, y'all, it's out on Blu-ray. And it's demented. You should totally watch it. You'll be like, what's going on? Could this be coming true? Could it?
Could it?
Answer, no. However, completely interesting.
Yes.
And just a weird document of late 70s Jesus people. That's what they called it back then. The Jesus movement, the Jesus people.
I remember that
hysteria.
Hal Lindsey wrote this book that was super popular, the documentary based on. I remember the name of the Hal Lindsey book I actually read for a report in school in the 70s. Satan is alive and well and living.
Satan is alive and well and living on planet Earth.
Yes.
Like Jacques Brel.
They should have put out an album together.
Well, okay.
My pick this week, Dave, what has the president declared?
Ghost Protocol.
Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol.
For a second, I was like, wait, which president? The new one? Not the new one, but the current one?
Did you see the tweet?
He doesn't declare anything worth repeating.
The tweet where somebody said there's a line in Fallout where somebody says, the president knows about your mission. And they thought, oh, great, that means he would be tweeting out, send Ethan Hunt to get some plutonium that's out in the wind. Lots of bad nukes out there. Probably Obama's fault.
Right. So tell me about Ghost Protocol.
It is Brad Bird's live-action debut, the guy who did the two Incredibles movies and The Iron Giant. And it is, for me, the perfect Mission Impossible movie in that it's got the crazy-ass stunts, and it's got just enough characterization to keep you interested. They give Ethan Hunt a fun team that isn't just Simon Pegg and Ving Rhames, but also, like, Jeremy Renner and Paula Patton. And it is paced in a way that it is constantly thrilling, but I didn't feel like a beaten-up sack of potatoes by the end of it the way the two Macquarie movies did. So, that's my favorite.
We have a letter.
All right.
Just one. Only one. You know why? Because it is a list to be knifed, which people aren't doing very often now because we aren't telling them to keep doing it. When we just assumed that people were going to keep doing it and stopped saying, hey, do it, people stopped doing it. But now we have someone doing it.
We have a couple in the mailbag. The mailbag is, you know,
really full.
Really full.
I've reached a point now with the number of letters and emails we get that I just know now that we really probably can't get to all of them all the time. There's some that are just not going to get gotten to.
I mean, unless...
Which makes me feel sad, and I'm sorry for that.
Yeah.
We're a victim of our own, like...
Success?
Achieving-ness? Minus the Scientology?
But, you know, maybe... You know, I'm hoping there's going to be some slow weeks at some point.
How about 1 week we all agree not to talk to us?
No, I mean slow weeks for new releases.
Oh, I see. 1 week, everyone agree not to send us a letter. Maybe we can catch up. No, just do it whenever you want.
Yes, please.
We'll try our best.
Yes.
This is from Sean. I'm a recent listener to Linoleum Knife, but a longtime fan of Who Shot You and Pop Rocket.
Oh, yay.
Oh, the long tentacles of Pop Rocket.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I finally dove deep into your back catalog. I'm a working class man of 25 with a huge affinity for film and creative writing. I have a degree in it. I currently own a collection of over 300 DVDs.
Wow.
Only about 9 of which I haven't watched yet, and quite a few I've seen upwards of a dozen times. Mm. I love to analyze movies, mostly through a queer lens, because I can't change how I see the world. But I try to remain as objective as possible and give movies their due. I can find something good in nearly every film, whether it's the music, or a certain shot, or an actor's performance, or an idea. Have you seen the Kirk Cameron Christmas movie? Because I challenge you.
Oh, it's on.
Just FYI. Or an idea that the film contains and tries to make you think about it in new ways. By principle, I don't do top 10 lists by virtue of an ever-rotating mood, aesthetic, or want. However, I think I have compiled a list worthy of knifing, worthy because of how these films made me uncomfortable, made me think, made me cry in ways that shaped me into the well-rounded man I am today.
We'll be the judge of that.
The list is in no particular order. Damn. The Prince of Egypt.
I've never seen it.
He says, a visually stunning picture from DreamWorks Animation with musical elements and a very studied perspective of Moses and Ramses. I am not religious. I didn't grow up that way, but I find the film moving and inspiring. I've never seen it.
Yeah, no.
I just skipped it. I was like, nah.
All I know is about it is it has that Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston duet.
Yeah, about believing.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Apparently, they did not get along during that recording session.
No.
That's what I heard.
Shut up.
I heard they didn't get along very well during that recording session.
I'm sure that's just scurrilous gossip.
Sean, you get a pass for this one, because we haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Mysterious Skin.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah. Heart-wrenching tale of two boys' journey through trauma and identity. It is a hard film to recommend.
Yes.
It's not for the weak stomached, but it is beautifully crafted and earnestly presented.
Yes.
It is very... It moves very delicately around the traumatic incidents.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I think I would venture to say it is Greg Araki's finest film.
Yeah.
Although I still haven't seen Smiley Face.
My Own Private Idaho.
Okay.
He says, a feat in movie making to capture the anxiety and experience of a young man who suffers narcolepsy, unrequited love... with a nice little Richard III modernization on the side.
Speaking of vital Gus Van Sant.
Yes. It feels bitter and tender and all the things that make me ache for belonging and a feeling of home.
Wow.
Alien Resurrection.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that the Winona one, right?
This is the one from Janae and
Caro.
Or maybe one of them.
Just Janae.
He says, it is a campy, grotesque reflection of autonomy, motherhood, and the pains of life. I agree with you. I like it.
I got to see it again, I guess.
Yeah.
I just remember being like, but, you know, it's been a while.
AI. Mm. I'm a fan.
I know.
Yeah. He said, I would love to see the Kubrick ending and not the Spielberg one.
Yes.
But that being said, stories of androids searching for meaning and purpose and identity gets to me. This movie makes me cry. Feel things that most movies can't. Listen, I swear and vow to this day that we did get the Kubrick ending. That kid, he might have found his mommy, but he's going to spend eternity just talking to her, and she won't respond. How much more of a Kubrick ending do you want? That ending is heart-wrenching.
Yeah, I suppose.
And bleak.
I would have been perfectly happy if they just left him trapped under the Ferris wheel for all eternity.
I know,
that
I
would have been plenty bleak, too.
I know. The Little Prince.
The recent animated
I don't know.
One?
He goes on. Netflix released this adaptation featuring a little girl who wishes to break free from her overbearing mother and finds refuge in the quirky old pilot next door to her and shares with her this story of a little prince that changed the way he lived his life. I cried harder in this movie than anything else. I haven't seen it.
Wow. Okay, because I remember this one. This was like a year or two ago.
Uh-huh.
I remember loving the stuff with the girl and the pilot and loving the parts of the actual book. But then there's this whole section where, like, the little prince becomes an adult and is, like, working at a factory or something that I thought it went completely off the rails.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
So there's a 2/3 of this movie that I love.
I've seen the Bob Fosse musical version from the 70s.
No, Stanley Donen.
Sorry, Bob Stanley Fosse's Donen.
Yeah.
Stanley Donen.
This is 2/3 a good movie and 1/3 a just, like, what were they thinking for me?
Something called Coherence. Which I have not heard. I've never even heard of this
movie. I don't think I know it.
It says, a little indie gem a friend found for me that involves a dinner party, a comet, and confusion. I don't want to give it away. Please give it a try.
Okay. It's going on the list. Never heard of it.
The Ritual. A horror film that is one of only two movies that I've ever seen that truly captures what dreams really feel like. The other being an anime called Paprika. I saw Paprika.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really great.
The Ritual, don't
you? Yeah, I haven't seen this one either. Stoker, which I loved.
Not a fan.
He says, the idea of hereditary madness was handled far better than Hereditary.
No.
I'm going to say, excuse me, I don't know if I would say it's better than Hereditary, but I would say that it's in the same ballpark. It's in the same league. It is a wild movie.
Hot mess.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Well,
of course. So, okay. We're going to give you Ritual, Coherence, and Prince of Egypt. So what do you get? What do you not like on this list?
I'm not giving Stoker or
AI.
Okay. I'll go halvesies on on The Little Prince.
So that's like 85. You're like 85% knife, this list.
Yeah.
That's how knife you are, Sean.
Plenty knife.
He goes on to say that he likes Jurassic Park, 2001, Tootsie. Scrooge is also on my list, but I've already shared my feelings on Twitter about it with Alonzo.
Yes.
So there's that.
I hope you had a chance to listen to the Tinseltown episode.
As a final thought, I want to thank you both for being inspirations for me.
Go.
I'm always stunned when someone says I'm an inspiration of any sort, because I think, oh, dude, it's because you don't know me. But I also want to let people say it, because I don't want to negate what they say. But it's such a weird thing for me to hear.
Yeah.
Because I think, I'm an idiot. Like, most of the time.
You have no idea how we're barely keeping all this together.
Yeah. But I thank you.
But we appreciate it, yes.
And I'm going to let you say your thing. I want to thank you both for being inspirations for me to let my voice be heard as a queer trans man who is often silenced by those around me. I have things to say, whether they are the stories swirling and growing in my head or my experiences in the world. Keep on keeping on. Here's to more movies to knife in the future. Sincerely and queerly, Sean M.
Well, thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. That's lovely.
And say that stuff.
You know what it is? Here's what I think it is. When someone tells me I'm an inspiration, I think, oh, I'm going to disappoint you in 15 minutes. Like, it's right around the corner. I'm going to say something, do something, and you're going to say, oh, no, you're canceled. You're done. finished with you.
I thought I was inspired.
Whatever
by you,
I thought I liked about you, it's over. Yeah, I'm always on that train. I'm always thinking, no. I have a great disappointment. So, but yeah, again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's lovely to hear that from people.
It.
I'm gonna work on becoming better at listening to that and taking it.
All right.
Yes. Maybe tomorrow. We're done.
We're done.
We already told you to join Patreon.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Right.
Go check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Go listen to Bibbs and Whitney on Canceled Too Soon. Again, we're doing a crossover with them for their Patreon and our Patreon, but you can get Canceled Too Soon for free as well. It's a fun show. They're also on the Schmoes Know program, Critically Acclaimed. And while you're there, check out the Schmoes Know as well. Check out Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley and Sewers of Paris and the Comics Canon and All Things Cozy. And a new podcast that I have discovered that I think is really funny. If you share my interest in this sort of thing, Deck the Hallmark. It is three straight guys, one of whom loves Hallmark movies, one likes them, and one hates them. And they are going to go through all of the new holiday movies this year. They've already warmed up with a couple of holiday episodes. And in both of them, they then did a follow-up episode where they actually got somebody on the phone who worked on the movies and gave them fun kind of behind-the-scenes dish. So anyway, it's a neat show. Check it out. Fat Guys, the movies, the Criterion cast, Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. We will read it on the show. And also leave us positive.
Only 5-star.
Also leave us positive feedback.
I don't want to hear nothing from you if you got nothing, if you don't have 5 stars.
Leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and thelounge.com, Spotify, Google Play, Podbean, CastBox, etc., etc. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments or a list you would like to have knifed.
Yes.
We'll do our best to get to it. And, yeah.
In January of 2019.
What are we doing? Do we know? We're going to be back.
What do you mean, what are we doing?
When
are we going to be back with more podcasts?
Yeah.
Well, I know we're recording at least one or two every day before we leave town.
Okay.
To bank them so that we have things to post when we're not home.
So keep watching your podcast app for new episodes of this show and all of our Patreon shows as well. We'll have a little some little trinkets and surprises.
Trinkets and surprises
along the way. But thank you all for listening. Y'all are great. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.